He scores! Gilmore scores! With 1:03 left!
Off the glass, it left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Yell. Aguila's rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson.
Okay, let's get to it. Happy Tuesday. It is Tuesday, March 25th, and we welcome you to the Scotiabank Saddle Dome, and we welcome you to this hour of Flames Talk on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. Pat Steinberg, Wes Gilbertson of Post Media, along with you on this Tuesday edition of the program, and we've got lots to get to on Tuesday's Flames Talk. We got lots to get to when it comes to this Flames group. And here we go, Wes. 13 games to go as the Flames are back on home ice for a couple of games here. And the mindset seems to be good as the Flames get set to take on Seattle.
Can I just jump in here? Because I know it's a big game, but are we just going to skip the pleasantries?
I was
like,
actually
not
just,
even a hello?
I was just about to say, oh, by the way.
By
hello,
the way.
Wes.
Hi, Pat.
Hey, look, there's a... It's been a hectic time in my life. So
you know what? I can appreciate the game face. Very businesslike.
So that's all I got is a game face these days. So, hello. How are you?
I'm good, buddy. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm hanging in. So three straight wins coming off of this road trip. They lose the first game, as we know, then rattle up three in a row. Saturday's comeback overtime win over the Islanders, their last win, and now they get set to take on the Seattle Kraken. But they also have to keep on target, right? Like, Vancouver pulled one out of the fire on Monday night and found a way to beat New Jersey in a shootout, scoring with, 36 seconds to go, and when, who did it end up being? Connor Garland ended up getting credit for the goal. It was at first Jake DeBrusk, and they made the change. St. Louis, of course, has decided they don't have any interest in losing either. So yeah, this road trip was great and the vibes are high, and they should be feeling good about where their game is right now. And yet at the same time, Wes, they have to keep their eye on the prize. They got to stay on target and they got to keep pushing this thing forward. And so I like a lot of what I'm hearing from inside the room on this Tuesday. I liked a lot of what I heard from the room on Monday after practice. Listen to this from Mackenzie Weegar. Like, the vibes are high, but the mindset is, okay, things are good, but we got more big games in front of us.
It was no quit there. You obviously go into MSG and play a team that's in a similar situation. And, you got that one out. Played great there, and you move on quick on the road. And, right now it's turning the page quick. You go into Jersey and have a character comeback win, similar to the Islanders. It was obviously they scored that big goal with 2.5 minutes left. And I'm obviously glued to the, to the screen. And, but I stayed there. And, the belief is it's never gone with this team. And Hubie just, had a huge goal. We face adversity, all year, and I've talked about this a lot with this group. And there's the belief, there's no quit, it's whatever it takes. And that's what we showed that road trip, I thought.
So they're liking the way their game is trending. But then our colleague Eric Francis asked a question to Ryan Huska right at the end of his media availability on Tuesday morning, which gives you a little bit more insight into where the team's mindset is right now.
Is there a recognition in the room that this could be a trap game?
No. I don't, at this time of year, with where we're at, every game is a playoff game for us. So, I think as a coach, we talked about with the players yesterday early in the year. Coaches always worry about situations like that. But with where we are in the standings and the importance of every game, I don't foresee that happening.
And that's a mindset they've got to keep, right, Wes? Like, this is, hey, it's great, awesome. We're in this spot. We've won three in a row. We're playing some good hockey, all that type of stuff. But eyes got to be on the prize. And this group needs to continue to make sure that they focus themselves on the next game and the next challenge. And all they've got in front of them is this game against Seattle. They can't worry about what Vancouver, or they can't worry themselves about what St. Louis or anybody else is doing right now. They just got to keep themselves on target and make sure they've got a good game Tuesday night against the Kraken team that's not going to make the playoffs this year.
Yeah, and I agree with you that they can't necessarily worry themselves with what those other teams are doing, but hasn't this terror that the St. Louis Blues have been on, hasn't it sharpened the focus of everything in this wild card race? Like, I remember sitting right here with you, buddy, less than 2 weeks ago and talking about the Flames-Canucks game here at the Saddle Dome and how that was going to put one of those two teams in the driver's seat for the wild card. And, you know, I think what the Flames have learned, and I think what you can attribute a lot of the mindset that we're talking about right now to, is you can't afford many stumbles with the way the Blues are going. Yeah, it's great. You went on the road and you went through that New York swing and did something that's very difficult to do. You won all three games in that area. And yet, if you zoom out just a little bit, before that you collected just 1 point of a possible six, right? So in a six-game span now, you're 3-2-1. Really nothing wrong with that in the grand scheme. And yet, because the Blues in their past six have been 6-0, you kind of find yourself now playing catch-up. And the games-in-hand situation allows the Flames to control their own destiny. But when I say that what the Blues are doing has sharpened their focus, I think what it's shown is this went from, you know, kind of a race to a dead sprint all of a sudden.
Yep.
Because the St. Louis Blues, to use, and we've talked in the past about your illustrious 100-meter career, the St. Louis Blues are trying to kick it into their final sprint, right? And now it's up to everyone to keep up. I actually think that's a good thing for the Flames, because it really sharpens the focus that, yeah, you can't come home and have a couple tough games on home ice, because you're going to run out of time to make up for it.
There's just so much less margin for error with the way this thing has gone. And you know, there's one texter, I think it's John. There's been a couple of others who have been very adamant that, hey, like, we've been talking so much about the Canucks, and to your point about less than 2 weeks ago, we were sitting here talking about a Canucks game and how that could be such an important part of Calgary's season. But there's been a few people on our text line that have said, hey, what, you know, with what the Blues have done since Jim Montgomery's taken over, what we saw them do down the stretch just 6 years ago in 2019, and it's a very different team, but still some of the same players and the same goaltender, you know, that don't write off this Blues group, because they're rolling too, and they might turn into a factor and all that type of stuff. I've seen on the text line for the last number of weeks, so I give those people a lot of credit, because, you know, I've been somewhat dismissive of St. Louis as we're talking about this type of stuff. So, yeah, I like their mindset, and you're right. St. Louis has definitely turned this into a situation where the margin of error is that much slimmer than it would have been had they not turned themselves into the team in the driver's seat. And I know the Flames have got the games in hand, but games in hand don't mean anything unless you're going to win them all. And so, yeah, the Flames have won three in a row, but they're not going to win the rest of their 13. And so there's no guarantee that they're going to be able to make up those games in hand, which means that you have to look at each game and this next one against the Kraken is, hey, these are two that we need to have. And I do think they've got that mindset right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And you want those games in hand to be your buffer, not your reason for hope, right? And by that, I mean, like, four is starting to feel like a little bit of a gap. And if things do not go the Flames' way tonight against Seattle and the Blues get another positive result, we could be talking about six, right? And that suddenly, hey, it's great to have games in hand, but you don't want to be in a situation where your only chance of catching them is then to win all your games in hand. Like, you would like to keep that gap tight enough that you have them within striking distance and the games in hand give you the big benefit.
Yeah.
And right now, the Flames are there. I mean, they're looking at it saying, okay, 4 points back, three games in hand. That means we got to win two out of the three to pull into a tie. That's an okay spot to be. But I think what the Blues, with this incredible run that they've been on, have done is make teams feel like we can't let these guys get too much further ahead.
Yep.
Because how many times have you and I, whether it was here in the hot stove or at a morning skate over the years, talked about a team that was five out with however many to play, or six out, or it's a lot of ground to make up.
Yep.
It becomes very difficult. So kind of a weird scenario with the number of games in hand. Like, you rarely see one team with 13 games left and another team with 10, as is the case going into tonight. But you got to keep that gap from getting too big. And the Flames know they can't count on teams right now to beat the Blues because the Blues are rolling. And so the way that you keep that gap from growing is to make sure you take care of your own business.
A few texts, 960-960. This says, the vibes are immaculate, Pat. That comes from Dustin. Derek in Edmonton says, immaculate vibes and a backs return. What a night for Flames hockey. Keep grinding it out on the mini homestand and then a big battle of Alberta for hockey night in Canada. Now, the vibes may be immaculate, but Michael Backlund will not return on Tuesday unless something has changed since Tuesday morning. But Michael Backlund got bag skated after morning skate. He was the last one off the ice, and Ryan Huska said he's not playing tonight, or don't expect him tonight. So Michael Backlund is probably on track for a Thursday night return against the Dallas Stars. He will not return Tuesday against Seattle.
It still feels like a pretty big positive, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
Michael Backlund on the ice
still
yesterday.
Trending in the right direction.
Yeah, and I paid really close attention. I wasn't at morning skate today. I certainly saw your and other reports that Backlund was skating long, but I paid really close attention to him yesterday. You know, how hard he could shoot, what sort of mustard he was putting on his passes, what was his facial expression after taking a few faceoffs, all that sort of stuff. I think it's probably fair to say from what we witnessed yesterday that we're not talking about a guy who's at 100%, but sure looks like he's close to being able to get in there and try and tough it out. And
yep.
So I'd characterize this, what Ryan Huska told us yesterday is let's see how it responds. It would have been pretty disheartening, I think, to see this morning's morning skate participants and not see Backlund there. That would have been a bad,
right?
Really bad.
That
would have
been a bad omen. Yep.
I think this is still very positive.
This says from Sean, my projection was 11-6 over the final 17 games. St. Louis doing what they're doing was not part of the plan, though. And yeah, I don't know if St. Louis going on this run was something that anybody really had on their bingo card, and yet here they are, and they've made this thing that much more interesting. And I give them a ton of credit. I mean, Jordan Binnington is playing some really good hockey. Mm-hmm. They're doing this all without Colton Parayko on their blue line.
Although I saw he was on the ice today.
Yeah, and that's good news for them.
Yeah.
And look, they have the least remaining games. They've got 10 games to go, and their schedule isn't as easy as it has been. Their final 10, a little bit more difficulty than the 6 or 7 leading up to it. St. Louis also plays Tuesday night when they take on Montreal, a similarly desperate team, so mm-hmm. by no means is that a gimme.
And then Thursday against Nashville, who they seem to play every third game and always beat 4-1.
Then, of course, there's Vancouver, and I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, I know that everybody is very quick to write them off, and understandably so. They won't have Elias Pettersson for a while. They won't have Nils Höglander for a while. Now, Thatcher Demko is finally back, wins in his return over New Jersey on Monday night. But, you know, they can't seem to score. They can't seem to they can't seem to go a minute without allowing a goal after scoring themselves. They can't seem to string more than one win together right now. So Vancouver is hanging around, but also not really showing any signs of being the team that is going to go on the type of run that would need to get them into a playoff spot.
No, and yet I would think in that market they'll be talking about the comeback last night against the New Jersey Devils very much the way we talk in this market about the value of storming back against those same Devils or erasing that brief but late deficit on Long Island to ultimately win that game. Like, you look at those two results for the Flames as not just another sign of the resilience we've seen from the group, but as a potential springboard for a run, right? You look at that and say those are the kind of wins that can give you a real shot in the arm that you can carry forward. I'd say the same about that victory for the Canucks last night.
You hope not if you're the Flames.
Absolutely, and you outlined all the reasons whether it be Pettersson's availability, whether it be the scoring struggles, whether it be the habit of allowing a goal momentarily after you score one, you know, whatever the reason, you outline a lot of reasons for optimism for Flames fans that the Canucks aren't about to start to surge. We haven't seen them really put it together over an extended stretch.
Heath writes, guys, that Canucks game is what worries me. It could come back to haunt them. Not only did they allow Vancouver to stay in the fight, but it also is one less point St. Louis has to make up. Feels like a lost opportunity from Heath. Yes, it does. But here's the sci-fi nerd in me. If Calgary wins that game and Vancouver doesn't come back to win in a shootout, do they then, like, do the games that, like, you know what I'm saying? If that changes, then maybe we're not talking about the New Jersey comeback and they lose that game in New Jersey. Like, who knows what happens if Calgary wins that game? Yes, that was a missed opportunity for sure, but I don't know. They made up for it with a couple of – their last two wins were ones that maybe they shouldn't have won, while they lost one that maybe they shouldn't have lost against the Canucks a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, not to disagree with you or disagree with Heath on the text line, but I'm looking back –
just don't disagree.
I'm looking back to January 14th and 16th when the Flames went into St. Louis to play two and – didn't deliver wins, but didn't deliver the sort of performances that you would expect against a team that they really had a chance to put on the brink at that point. You know, if the Flames get better results there in
mid-January.
Wouldn't
it have been 6 points they would have put themselves up on them by?
I don't actually think it's far-fetched to say that the trade deadline in St. Louis could have looked much different if not for that 4-point swing in the standings. And so, to settle for 1 point and allow Vancouver to escape here with two a couple weeks ago, that one hurts. But if we're talking potential regrets, I'm honed in on that 2 games in 3 days stretch in St. Louis in the middle of January.
And somebody on the text line thinking very, very similarly. If I were a betting man, I would have put down money after the Blues, after the Flames lost that back-to-back to the Blues. Those points were going to be the difference at the end of the season. We'll see if that ends up being the case, but it's hard not to see how important those were, and it's hard not to see how big a deal those 4 points could end up being when it's all said and done.
Yeah, we're way too soon, obviously. You know, we just recapped the Flames being in still an advantageous position because of their schedule. We're way too soon to be talking about the points that you let slip away. But if we do wind up at that position in the middle of April, those would be nights we're talking about.
In terms of playoff odds, I do like to just keep this keep track. And
I haven't heard them for a couple days, so I'm glad you're trotting these out.
So over at Money Puck, it is St. Louis at 54.3%, Calgary next 30.6%. Even with the win last night, Vancouver 17.3%, and with their loss to Detroit, Utah dropped to 5.3% when it comes to their playoff odds. I'm just pulling up the hockey reference.
Let me ask you one while if you still have Money Puck open.
Yeah.
Just because I've been paying so much attention to the Canadians' push and because they play St. Louis.
They're 49%.
49, okay.
Yep.
Okay.
It's a big game for both teams. And then over at Hockey Reference.
It'd be fun to see just a pile of Canadian teams in the playoffs, wouldn't it?
It would be, yeah. It's actually quite similar, the numbers now over at Hockey Ref. They've got St. Louis at 54%, so almost identical as to what Money Puck's got them. Calgary a little higher at Hockey Reference at 32.5%. Vancouver a little lower at 14.5%. So same order, though, and what do they got, Utah? They've got Utah at 4.9%. So both Hockey Reference and Money Puck have very similar-looking models now when it comes to the playoff odds for the four teams. And really now I think we're down to three teams involved.
And let me throw some stats out there as well, because this is one I've been keeping close eye on. I know we've referenced it on the show, but just the latest, and this comes from Tankathon, on strength of schedule, because for for a while, the Blues had the easiest remaining schedule. They had a bunch of Nashville, as they still have one. They had Chicago, etc. So just the latest, St. Louis now has the 14th easiest schedule in the NHL for their remaining 10 games. The average point percentage of opponents, 5.53. Flames are 20th easiest, but not a huge gap from 5.53 to 5.45. And where's Vancouver in here? Oh, a little bit higher. The ninth hardest schedule, 5.68.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Vancouver, of the three, Vancouver toughest.
Yeah.
St. Louis second. Calgary third.
Calgary
second. No, St. Louis third.
No, you got it right, and I originally had it wrong. So Vancouver, ninth toughest remaining in the NHL. St. Louis, 14th toughest. Calgary, 20th toughest.
Okay.
Yeah. My apologies. I put a bunch of marbles in my mouth as I tried to read those. It didn't go great.
The big ones for Calgary, the tough ones for Calgary remaining, Dallas, Edmonton, Colorado, Utah. They've got that big one. They've got two left against Vegas. They got a Minnesota, and they've got that one against LA to wrap up the season. Yeah. I mean, the Flames are still...
And on the other side of the ledger, they have San Jose and Anaheim twice. Plus, tonight against Seattle will be the other non-playoff team.
And Calgary is very much in their own driver's seat. Like, they could, you could be in that locker room right now and say, boys, we control our own destiny. And St. Louis could say the same thing. St. Louis has got the more points, so they could be like, yo, boys, we control our own destiny. We're in the driver's seat. And you could be Nazem Kadri or Jonathan Huberdeau or Mackenzie Weegar in that Flames room right now, and you could be saying, boys, we got six potential points in hand on them. Well, this is our race right now. Like, we're the ones who control it. So, you know, that's a good place to be if you're the Flames as well.
Yeah, you just need to win games like tonight to stay there, right? Like that.
Yeah, these are the ones you've got to have. Yeah,
that narrative can shift pretty quickly when you get an opportunity to play a non-playoff team in your own building when you're feeling good about yourself. These are the games that if you give them away, and don't get me wrong, Seattle and Calgary only play one goal games. This is not a pushover of a matchup by any stretch, but this is one of those ones you got to have.
Couple of news and notes. We mentioned Michael Backlund will not play. We will see the return of Mackenzie Weegar and Joel Farabee in this game today. They missed Saturday afternoon's game, which is actually pretty impressive, which wasn't talked about a ton, but they win Saturday's game without those two in the lineup as well, which is pretty significant.
And with Dan Vladar in net. And I don't say that as a shot at Dan Vladar. I say it to illustrate that you won that game without your top minute man on your blue line right now. Like, Mackenzie Weegar is more often than not leading your team in ice time at the end of the night. So you won that game without Weegar, without Dustin Wolf as your starter, and without two-thirds of your shutdown line in Backlund and Farabee.
Yep.
Pretty darn good.
It is Pat and Wes. We're underway this hour on Flames Talk from the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. Hey, can't find the latest episodes of your favorite HGTV, Discovery, and Food Network shows? Rogers Xfinity TV has the newest seasons of the top-rated shows on these popular channels, while other providers are no longer including them in their TV lineup. If your TV provider doesn't carry these channels, you're missing out on new seasons of Celebrity IOU, Hometown, Beat Bobby Flay, Expedition X, and more. Don't be fooled by other channels pretending to be these networks you know and love. Get the latest with Rogers Xfinity TV at Rogers.com.
This is Flames Talk. Join the conversation at 960-960. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, it's time for a Tuesday edition of our Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The fastest-growing segment of vehicles they sell is electric. Informed buyers are coming to see. Perhaps you should discover why minutes from the Calgary Airport. It's Pat Steinberg. Wes Gilbert's in the Post Media now. Derek Wills joins us to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable. And not expecting any changes or very many changes to Calgary's lineup for Tuesday night against Seattle. That's because Michael Backlund will not play, so he'll miss his sixth consecutive game with that upper body injury. However, Joel Farabee will return, so we're expecting Farabee to remain on that line with Sharon Govich and Coleman, and we're expecting the top six to remain the same, which over the last, three games has seen For the first time since December, the duo of Jonathan Huberdeau and Nazem Kadri not playing on the same line. Kadri's back with Zeri and Pospisil. Huberdeau's on a line with Frost and Coronado. Both have had some decent success since being put together over the last three games. And, Wilsey, you asked head coach Ryan Huska about that in the media lounge this morning after morning skate. Guys, with those two being on separate lines, is that better for the long term? Or is the group better suited when they're playing together on the same line?
It's a great question. I'm not sure there's a correct answer to it. So right now, without Michael Backlund, Flames, who weren't all that deep down the middle to begin with, are not as deep up the middle of the ice. So I think having those two guys split apart is probably what's best for the team right now, and that's why it's something that Ryan Huska went to and has stuck to through three straight wins. What I like about having Jonathan Huberdeau and Nazem Kadri on separate lines is that if the game isn't going the way you want it to, you can always reunite them and put them back together. And not that I'm making this comparison, but we're going to have a Battle of Alberta coming up on Saturday. And what do the Oilers do? If they start the game with Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl on the same line and the game's not going the way they want it to, they split them up and vice versa. And again, I'm not comparing Jonathan Huberdeau and Nazem Kadri to Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid.
I had the same thought, Wilsey, but I'm glad you can take take the strays on the text line. But you're right. You have a chance to put your two big fish, however big or whatever their names are, together.
Yeah, and how good have those two guys been? Like, I mean, consistently good this season. And I actually think that both Jonathan Huberdeau and Nazem Kadri, with so much on the line down the stretch for the team, have taken another step. They've both elevated their games. So I think it was fitting that Jonathan Huberdeau scores the game-tying goal in the last 3 minutes, and then Nazem Kadri scores the game-winning goal in overtime in that thrilling 4-3 victory over the Islanders on Saturday. But both guys have been great, and right now they've got some lines that are working, and they've gone back to Kadri and the kids, so Nazem Kadri between Connor Zeri and Martin Pospisil. I think Zeri's taken some steps in the right direction. Pospisil, to me, looks like he's playing through something, and with him getting maintenance days, I think that's safe to say. But then I like the new-look line. Morgan Frost is starting to look a little bit better to me, playing in a line between Jonathan Huberdeau and I think that line with Matt Coronado scoring the way he's been scoring has some potential as well. But I like the options the Flames have right now with those two guys apart and the ability to put them back together if they want to.
Yeah, the biggest argument for keeping them split is that it's allowed you to get two lines going.
Yeah.
And what's been our conversation over and over throughout the 3.5 months that Huberdeau and Kadri have played together, going back to that awful game in Pittsburgh when the only thing to come out of it was some fresh line combos.
Yeah.
But what we've talked about so often is, okay, those two guys are really going well. There's some chemistry there. How do they get another line going? And Ryan Huska, I imagine, finally threw his hands up in the air after the Toronto game and said, I got to split them and just see if we can get more guys going. And I think Connor Zeri, who really struggled to build his game in the immediate return from his injury, has had some spark with Kadri. Like, I see why that worked last year. I think we're going to see Zeri, if that maintains, be more of a difference maker down the stretch. You have to love what you've seen from Matt Coronado, of course, lately. And so if those two guys, and now I'm talking Kadri and Huberdeau, can sort of drive separate lines, you're a deeper team. And to your point, I won't name the names. I'll just let you take the flack for it. But just like we see elsewhere in this province, I could be talking about the Lethbridge Hurricanes for all we know. Just like we see elsewhere in this province, when you need a goal, you know there's some chemistry there, and you can put your big guns back together.
Yeah, it's had me thinking about, you know, when they have those guys together, they clearly have a number one line, which is great. But when they're not, and you've got multiple lines going, I kind of wonder if it's not better long term to have them apart, only because this is not a team that we look at as being a top-heavy group, and so their only like their best chance of having success is when it's a, you know, especially in the top nine, everybody in each line contributing and doing some good work. And so I think about what the Frost line is doing with Huberdeau and Coronado. You know, right now there's not really a big drop between what if you call the Kadri line the number one line and the Frost line the number two line. There's not a big drop there. And then when Backlund returns, you know, presumably Thursday now against Dallas, well, now you're kind of 1-2-3. There's not a huge gap between those three lines, whereas before with Coronado playing on the Backlund line for so long and Huberdeau and Kadri being together for so long, there was a bit of a drop. And even when Frost was acquired, that was pretty clearly the third line. But, you know, you talked about a Wilsey, Morgan Frost has maybe upped his game a little bit and starting to get a little bit more comfortable now as a member of the Flames. And so, you know, the more I've thought about it, the more I wonder if keeping those guys apart plays more into the strengths of what this team is actually all about and how they're built.
It's actually hard to number the lines right now,
yeah,
other than the third and fourth lines. But if we're talking the top six, because Nazem Kadri is clearly your number one centerman, but I would actually probably say the Morgan Frost line with Jonathan Huberdeau and Matt Coronado, two 20-goal guys, is probably your number one line, or at least your 1A line right now. Not that any of that matters. I do wonder if it could be something that changes based on whether the team is at home or on the road. And the reason I wonder is because if you're on the road and Nazem Kadri and Jonathan Huberdeau are both playing on the same line, it's a lot easier for your opponent to hard match against what is the clear number one scoring line for the Flames. But if you're at home and you can get away from those matchups a little bit more often, then maybe putting them together isn't the worst thing in the world. So it could be situation dependent, but right now, hey, the Flames have won three games in a row. The lines are working. And when Michael Backlund comes back, you've got another option in your bottom six, middle six, whatever you want to call it. But hey, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, if you get to a point to your, you know, argument about home-road matchups, if you get to a point where you really want to put Huberdeau and Kadri back together, you hope that what you accomplish by splitting them can now work for the other guys. And by that, I just mean you took some confidence that you had with Kadri and Huberdeau producing the way they were, and you spread it out, right? You said, okay, this guy's confident. Maybe Jonathan Huberdeau's confidence can rub off on Frost and Coronado. And it has, right? Maybe Nazem Kadri's confidence can rub off on Connor Zary. And it has.
Yeah.
Now, if you need to split them, you need Matt Coronado to maintain that confidence. You need Connor Zary's game to keep building in the right direction. I guess that's the next question to be answered is, how much credit do those two guys specifically in Huberdeau and Kadri deserve for what's now two stronger lines? Could you split them up and feel like you've got some of those other guys going?
Yeah, and I do think that Connor Zary's game is slowly trending in the right direction, but I still think he has a long way to go before he gets back to who he was before the injury. And I just hope that he gets there at some point in time this season, because he was such a dynamic player for the Flames prior to that knee injury that kept him out for 15 games. But 3 goals and 4 points in 12 games since he came back. And, you know, Connor Zary is a guy who's still developing and growing as a player. So, man, if he could get back to where he was, that would be a huge shot in the arm for this team.
The number that worries me there, and I'm trying to pull it up, but the even strength production from Connor Zary, and I understand there's been some pauses in his season, but the even strength production there has not been what you hoped it would be in his sophomore season, right? I'm finally getting to it. Just let me whistle for a second. Connor Zary has 17 even strength points in 52 games this season. You need that to take a jump.
And he has the ability to be a more impactful player on the score sheet.
Yeah,
so
no argument here.
Yeah. One guy who has made an impact, especially recently, is Matt Coronado. Ooh. It's our Daily Flames Roundtable. Derek, Wes, Pat on this Tuesday.
Are we calling him Mr. New York or Mr. 100?
Today we'll call him Mr. 100 because Tuesday night he'll play in his 100th NHL game. And in his 99th NHL game, he became a 20-goal scorer for the first time in his career. He'll probably finished the season as one of just three Flames players to hit the 20-goal plateau, because you know, probably don't see with how this team struggles to score and this just being a low-scoring team by their very nature, you know, outside shot that somebody else could do it, but pretty unlikely. So he hits 20 goals. He does it on a tear on the road trip, 4 goals in his last 3 games. Guys, you know, I know Matt Coronato doesn't play a full NHL season, but by all intents and purposes, he was only sent to the American League because of a numbers game. On merit, he's been a full-time NHLer from start to finish. And you know, I think that we can call this unofficially his first full NHL season, because he only went to the American League for a temporary time and only because of that numbers game. So what has allowed him to go from last year, a nice story coming out of training camp, makes the team out of training camp, but it becomes pretty apparent about a month in that the NHL, he's not quite ready, so he spends most of last year with the Wranglers. This year, it's been apparent all year that this is the league he belongs in, and it has been, you know, even more apparent of late. What has allowed that to happen? Where have we seen the biggest jumps in his game?
Well, don't forget, it wasn't at the start of the season, because Sam Honzek earned a spot on this team, and it quickly became apparent that he wasn't quite ready for prime time, and Matt Coronato was, and I give him a lot of credit for handling that the right way. But, you know, what a trip for him. Playing in front of family and friends, including his parents, Richard and Samantha, close to home, a native of Green Lawn, New York. He scores in all 3 games. He gets the game-winning goal at Madison Square Garden. That must have been an absolute thrill. And then scores another big goal in that come-from-behind victory over the Devils. And then was 1 goal away from a Matt Trick playing on Long Island for the first time. He grew up not far from UBS Arena.
I got to cover my nose at that one.
While I'm getting crushed on the text line, I'm just going to... Just going to throw myself out there again.
But Matt Trick.
Here's an interesting tidbit from our friends at Sportsnet Stats. So when Matt Coronato scored twice in that 4-3 overtime victory over the Islanders on Saturday, it was goals number 19 and 20 on the season for him. He joined Dion Phaneuf, Sean Monahan, Johnny Gaudreau, and Matthew Tkachuk as the only Flames players aged 22 or younger to score 20 or more goals in a season since the turn of the century. So I think that adds some perspective to just how good he's been as a 22-year-old.
I don't want to jump in, but I want to share another stat, and then you can pick up where you left off. My co-worker at Post Media, Danny Austin, did some legwork on this one. Very similar. So this is also in the 2000s. So if you look at who has the most goals in their first 100 career games, Matt Coronato is now fifth on that list, trailing Monahan, Gaudreau, Aginla, and Dion Phaneuf.
Wow.
Most goals in your first 100 career games with the Flames. So a very similar list. You had Tkachuk on yours, I believe. Aginla was the different one. Was that right? But either way, like you're an elite company in this franchise when you're talking about being mentioned with those guys.
Yeah, I mean, a good group of players to be included with. And for me, his game is growing in a lot of areas. I think he's way better without the puck than he used to be. But the biggest thing for me, fellas, is consistency, because we saw flashes of it last season. We saw flashes of it in the first half of this season. But for me, he has been consistently good in the back half of the season. Even when he's not scoring goals and producing points, and he's doing that more often now than he has at any point in time in his NHL career, but even when he's not chipping in offensively, his work ethic is outstanding, and he's doing other things to help this team win. And he no longer, to me, looks like a player who you have to put on a line with Michael Backlund and Blake Coleman to prop him up. I feel like you can put Matt Coronato anywhere, and he's still going to have success. And I don't know if he has the best shot on the team. He might, but he certainly got one of the best shots on the team. It's an elite weapon, and he's been using it, and it's been a lot of fun to watch his growth and his development. And I said it last week on the roundtable. I'll say it again. I think this guy is going to score 30 more than once in this league, and that might happen next season.
I had a similar list of things that I've seen in terms of improvement. I won't sort of piggyback on all yours, so I'll just mention two that are a little different. This is and this list continues to grow, but this is another area where Flames skating coach Danielle Fujita deserves a lot of credit. Mm-hmm. Because Matt Coronado's...
By the way, now I have nothing to add.
Oh, you're out?
Yeah, I'm out. So we just ended right.
Okay, see you, Pat.
What button do I push when we go to commercial later?
This one right here.
Okay, I got that, yeah. Danielle Fujita has done a terrific job for this organization with a list of prospects, right? Connor Zary, Matt Coronado, even going back to his first stint, Justin Kirkland will tell you a big part of him eventually living his NHL dream was his work with Danielle. And so I want to give her some credit here because I think a big part of Matt Coronado's consistency and being able to use that lethal shot that you talk about is that he made some maybe minute but still significant improvements in his skating. Mm-hmm. I really think he realized in his first partial season in the NHL, and I'm calling that last season, not his one-game cameo in the previous year, but I think he realized that the pace had to be a little bit better if he was going to do what he'd done at other levels. And credit to him, he put in the work. Credit to Danielle. Like, they came up with a game plan that's really working. And the other thing I want to mention, guys, there were a bunch of times last season where I'd be sitting upstairs in the press box beside Danny, and I'd say, after a Coronado play, he's got to shoot that. He's got to shoot that. And I don't think that's uncommon for a young player to come into the NHL and look to defer. In fact, we've seen it with just about every young player. The guys on the stat list that you and I trotted out, Wilsey, those guys went through it as well. But I think Matt Coronado has learned to be a little more selfish in a good way. I do think he's passing up on a few less of those golden opportunities. He was trying to kind of tic-tac-toe it because it was just a sign of respect, and he's about as respectful of a young man as you'll meet. He'd want to dish it back, and now, and I think it's something Blake Coleman pestered him to do a lot more often, now he's ripping it when he gets those opportunities. And I think that's really helped the knack that he has for producing and for scoring in particular shine through.
Yeah.
Well, the skating is a really important one for sure. I do, and I've noticed this even going back to the beginning of the season, and it's only kind of grown, is just how much more confident the ability to use that shot, and the more that it's going in, the more that you see him use it, and we are seeing him, and you know, Nazem Kadri's talked about this, Michael Backlund's talked about this, Blake Coleman's talked about this. They've really worked on, like, stop looking for us. Like, when you've got an opportunity, you've got the shot, like, rip it. I think Blake Coleman and Michael Backlund would both sit here and tell you that, no, Matt Coronado's got a better shot than we do. We want him to use it. Like, we want the goals to go in. So, like, don't look for us. Shoot the puck. And so we're seeing that as well. But the last thing that I'd add about him is I think a big reason why he is here and why his success has taken such a big jump from one year to the next is because at all times he has, you know, taken the setbacks or the disappointing parts of this journey and taken them in a positive way. So, you know, he gets sent to the American League to begin last year, a month into last year. And he wasn't happy about it, and he was like, I think that I can play in the NHL. But he went down to the American League, and it wasn't like it took him a month to start producing. He was producing almost immediately and went on to be a very productive player in that league until he got called up to finish the year. And so he took that and took that as an opportunity and took it as a positive and applied himself the right way. And he went into this offseason knowing way more what an NHL and professional season is going to look like. So went into the summer and was able to, you know, work on areas that he knows he needs to get better on. And he started applying those in his second NHL training camp. And, you know, I think we all agreed he deserved to make this team out of training camp. And he still got victimized by a numbers game to begin mm-hmm. the year, and he was really pissed off. I know I've heard from multiple people that I trust that, like, we're talking about a really upset player. He said, this is ridiculous. Why am I going down, type of thing? And he went down, but again, used it the right way and was only there for a week, but got into a game or two, was
two goals and two
played
games.
Well, yeah, two,
like,
goals.
Talk about
and two
responding
games,
the right way.
And then gets recalled. Anthony Mantha goes down in Montreal, and immediately Matt Coronado's back up, and now, you know,
you can probably say goodbye to your American League paychecks. I think that we know. I think he's going to be making NHL money for the rest of his career. And I give the guy a lot of credit because he is – handled all of the adversity, or maybe adversity is not the wrong word, but he's handled all the different twists and turns and setbacks of getting to this point, and he's handled them well, and he's used them properly, and now here he is. He's a 20-goal scorer.
If Reese is listening, you can send that Wranglers jersey to charity or something. He's not gonna need it.
Exactly.
No. You talked about playing with pace, and yes, his skating has really improved. But playing fast is about more than skating fast. It's about thinking the game. Clearly, he's got a really high IQ. He went to Harvard. But I think he's just playing way faster now, too. I think about some of the goals he scored on that trip and how quickly the puck was off his stick. And in the past, sometimes he would hold it just a split second too long and the shooting lane would be gone. And now it's, to me, it's a confident player. Like, confident players shoot the puck. He gets it, and if there's a shooting lane, he fires it because he's confident that he can beat a goaltender clean. Mm-hmm. And he's one of the Flames who actually does score from distance. This is a team that, you know, Ryan Huska has been harping them on them all season long. Mm-hmm. Got to go to the net. Got to go to the net. Jonathan Huberdeau has done a great job, and that's why he leads his team with 27 goals. But Matt Coronato is the one player who has consistently scored from distance. So to have a different type of threat like that, it's been huge for this team.
Well, and you can tell how much opponents respect it. You know, we talk so much about scoring four goals in those three New York games. I actually thought his strongest performance on that trip was Madison Square Garden, and it's because he probably should have had three assists. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He's got a really well-rounded game right now.
Yeah.
It's been good. Now a 20-goal scorer for the first time in his NHL career. We'll see where that number ends in his first full, or where that number tops out at in his first full NHL season. He's Derek Wills. He's Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg. That's your Daily Flames Roundtable as we start to wrap things up this hour. Thanks to Cam and Shan, our outstanding producers as well. And the Daily Flames Roundtable is brought to you, as always, by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The fastest-growing segment of vehicles they sell is electric. Informed buyers are coming to see. Perhaps you should discover why minutes from the Calgary Airport.